Well, let's now examine, as best we're able, briefly, suffering. Not evil now, please note the difference, but suffering. I think I find it helpful to distinguish between two different kinds of suffering. And the first, let me attend to now for 5 minutes, suffering which results from moral evil. Suffering, the consequence of moral evil, the consequence of sinful actions. Some examples. The crucifixion, perfect example. Jesus suffered on the cross because of the moral destitution of the people who put him there. What we call original sin is an enormous, big, mysterious name to cop all this, all the sin that's in the world that's not blamable on anybody, on you. The sin you inherit from through your genes, the sin you inherit through the environment around you, the sin that weighs on us all because we're Australians and because of what we've done here and all that social evil, institutional evil, massive stuff, and we can't lay the responsibility on a particular individual automatically. There may be areas of responsibility, of course, but we call it all original sin, environmental and hereditary evil. And the consequences of suffering that that brings about. My father may have been an alcoholic and for totally innocent reasons. Totally broken heart he may have had. But if he was, it may have affected my mother and it may have affected me and all the rest of my life, eh? And so on with all of us. We're all over. This is human stuff. Suffering inflicted by another person's sin and suffering resulting from my own sin, the hells that we build ourselves. Well, all those sufferings, are there anything we can say about them in theology? I think the first thing we must say is that the suffering is against the will of God. That's a terribly important thing to say. It's against God's will. Because if the evil is against God's will, surely the consequences of it are. You can't sheet that home to God. Your little child, don't let me hurt your feelings, but your little child is one or two or something and is run over by me because I've had too much to drink at a stupid Bucks clerical do and I drive in a drunken state and I run over your kid. A terrible, awful thing to happen. Don't be too hard on me, please, but for God's sake, don't be hard on God. And don't allow your friend to sneak out and say, it's all right, darling, it's God's will. God's will be buggered, it's God's will. God didn't want me to be drunk and to behave that way, and the consequences of it have to be sheeted home, in that case, to me, or to the bad roads, or to the whatever. So it is against, I think the first thing to say is it's against the will of God. But that's not the only thing to say. God's healing and redeeming love is present there to the sufferer, to the mother, to the child, surely, in a resurrection action. To the mother kneeling there. God is weeping with the mother. The mother isn't suffering from some eternal destiny, puppet-like plan that God had from all eternity. God's heart is weeping for what happened. I mean, Jesus wept. And is Jesus God? Isn't that what we're saying? How do we know who God is except we look at Jesus? Well, how does God respond to Lazarus' death? Not by saying, you beauty, my will's been fulfilled, but by weeping. All Jesus' ministry says that. And if we take Jesus seriously and take our theology seriously, then if we want to know God's response to the suffering of our world, watch Jesus healing and weeping and holding lepers and curing and all that enormous thing that he was going on about and speaking violently against the perpetrators of injustice of his day. If you think Jesus is little and gentle, read Matthew chapter 23 and come back and check your opinion. God, help us. Another thought that might help us in this, just think for a moment of all the suffering that would not be in our world if everyone responded like Jesus to God's love. I think that's not a bad little game to play in your mind. If you want to know about suffering in the world in relation to God, respond to God totally. Be a saint. And imagine the whole world did respond to God's will. And just think of the suffering that wouldn't be there God, oh boy, sounds great to me. There'd still be some left, but there'd be a hell of a lot not there. And the worst kind of sufferings wouldn't be there. So don't let's sheet those sufferings home to God. And my last statement on this kind of suffering, which makes up surely 90-something percent of the suffering of our world, the beautiful response of Jesus to it. It happened to him, and what did he do? He took it upon himself. And this is our lesson. Can you do it? You may not be able to, and if you can't, just give a yell. He took it upon himself, and he didn't do two things. He did not retaliate, and he didn't hand it on. And they're the two things that you and I sadly tend to do. We either come straight back and give what we get pretty smartly to even things up pretty quickly, or we store it up and belt the kids, or take it out on Aunt Flo, or who knows, somebody cops this built up tension inside us. Jesus did neither. He took it in, he absorbed it, he held it, and he stayed loving, and he's told us that we can do it. Doesn't mean we can all do it all the time, but he's saying it's possible to do it. And the way forward of freedom is the way that does that, that grows to be like him. Well, there's some thoughts on a lot of suffering in our world. Well, some thoughts on the other suffering, the suffering that doesn't result from moral evil. Suffering that is not related to human decision or indecision. Let us look at different types of suffering that aren't related from moral evil. Death is the obvious one, and the process of dying. In the way we are, we die. Our body can't keep functioning without any sin at all. It just, you've got to die when you're 500 or 900 or whatever it is. I don't know what you expect to be. Even if you ate perfect food and did everything, you're not meant to stay forever. A butterfly won't emerge unless the caterpillar goes through the chrysalis stage and into the butterfly, and whatever the beautiful destiny God has for you of the risen life, part of the process is in fact death. It could have been otherwise, but we would have lost a lot too. Congenital defects in some and all, I suppose, of the human species, and I'm not just talking about averages and statistics, but some of us, I might be born without eyes, and in some way that is another way of being, yes, and you don't define me as being blind, but the fact is that one of my faculties isn't functioning, and that has certain pain and suffering attached to it. No blame necessarily, it could be, but let's assume it's not. It's something that's all over the species of the world. We see all these different varieties of things that happen. External factors that are part of a finite world in process. An earthquake is kind of suffering from earthquakes is something to do with this, isn't it? The plates of the world or whatever, the way it functions, they move, and as they come together, they push up. And if you happen to be there having a holiday in the Bahamas at the time, well, you get a free journey down to hell or whatever happens, I don't know. Find yourself part of the magma. So that's nobody's to blame for that particularly, I wouldn't think. Floods and harvest failure, and I'm talking about terrible things here. I'm talking about them too lightly, aren't I? But so those things, the hurricanes, etc., that if they're related to nuclear testing, then my God, we can sheet it home to moral evil. But if they're part of a process of freezing of certain zones of the earth, we can't. You're right with me? They're just examples, and there are many others. And there's a lot of suffering in our world that comes that cannot be logically attached to sin. What can we say about it? Well, I'll tell you what I think I can say about it. Firstly, you can say it's God's will, in the sense that it's part of making such a world. It comes within divine providence here, and it's part of the process of a world in movement, in process. But that's not enough. You can also say that God is present to the sufferer and to the others, inspiring care. It doesn't make the suffering less, but I think it's true. And if I am an earthquake victim, my house is destroyed, my wife killed, and I'm maimed, it's a fact. It's terrible, and nothing in me wants to in any way say anything else. But if I am that way, If I'm dying in Calcutta, a meaningless death of suffering and malnutrition, and you come along and look into my eyes and hold my hand for the 5 minutes before I die, don't not do it, will you? I mean, I'm better off for your love. Whatever's happening to me, Jesus' message, faith in God, God's love there, could bring a peace. Even suffering isn't really the problem. It's probably despair is the problem. And I don't say that lightly, and perhaps that's a careless statement, but I hope you see what I'm trying to reach for. And if that's true, Jesus said it was true. He made it true. He invited us to make it true. He told us to go to prison and visit the people in prison and to care for the hungry and thirsty and all that. I mean, he did his best to do it and begged us and challenged us and threatened us to do the same. He said there's nothing else to do. So God is wanting all that done at any rate. And instead of looking up to God and saying, why do you allow it? Maybe we should watch God looking down to us and saying, why do you allow it? A lot of it. That's the moral evil side. Some of this, granted it, let's not despair or neglect. Let us bring our love, whatever is there. And ultimately, of course, we can't draw the horizon in this world, just as we couldn't at the cross. The resurrection is the final answer, and anything short of that does not satisfy us. It can't. The crucifixion, if that was the end of Jesus' life, well, there's nowhere to go. Our ultimate goal is in the resurrection, and that's not a pie in the sky when you die. It's a total experience of Jesus, and it's an ultimate act of faith, yes, that death is not the end of life. And now to conclude, suffering also seems to have some positive fruit. We've seen it as a diminishment. I've tried to look at it with you. But let's look for a moment at another aspect of suffering that is data to be observed. We talk about the school of suffering. We talk about those beautiful qualities that old and older people, and some young people, I suppose, in varying ways, those beautiful qualities of compassion that people have because they've suffered. And we know something of what that means. Suffering in the cause of right has a wonderful attraction about it. The Martin Luther Kings of our world. There's something extremely beautiful about Jesus on the cross that does a lot to others at any rate. The suffering of a person in hospital who can somehow hold a peace there. Don't you know mothers and fathers and priests and people who some suffering has brought low? Of itself it needn't, it might bring them low into despair. I'm not painting it, but I'm just saying it might also be a key to a breakthrough into faith, prayer, silence, love. It does happen. Paul, I shall be very happy to make my weaknesses my special boast so that the power of Christ may stay over me. That's why I'm quite content with my weaknesses. And with insult and hardship and persecution, the agonies I go through for Christ's sake, when I'm weak, that's when I'm strong. And you all have memories of times when even a discomfort, insult, hurt has reminded you that it wouldn't hurt if you prayed a bit. Whereas you might have been going on quite well, sadly, without prayer before. Suffering can open us up to conversion. It's done it. Plenty of the saints' lives are worth reading there. Fidelity in suffering can encourage other people. Paul talks about himself going through the pain of giving birth to you all over again till Christ is formed into you. And what was a beautiful attraction of Paul, people saw how much he suffered and loved and kept loving them, and they knew he was like a mother loving them into life. And that's pretty hard to forget someone who's doing that for you, isn't it? You know, you wish the heck they'd stop, perhaps, but they don't, and you kind of can't get it out of your hair. St. Monica and St. Augustine troubled him to death till he finally gave in and became a saint because he had no choice. His mother hounded him. God, we all know that experience. Finally, suffering in the cause of love can, and this is the Christian thing, may I look at the heading, suffering in the cause of love unites us to Jesus. There is a spirituality around which says suffering is better than something else. There are hagiography, writings of the saints, which make out that suffering has a certain tantalizing, beautiful value, and some of it's mean and mealy and inflicting on others, and it's a paltry, terrible, blooming spirituality, in my opinion. I don't know what to make of it all. Some of it's quite sick. Well, I'm not speaking about that. We're not called, well, let me say, I hope I'm right. We're not called to suffer, we're called to love. But we're called to not stop loving when suffering comes. I think that's surely Jesus. But if you are loving, and loving brings suffering as it did on Jesus, and you keep suffering through, or loving through the suffering, it unites you to Jesus. That's surely the heart of our beautiful spirituality, and there's plenty of text in the scripture on that. I can live for God. I've been crucified with Christ, says Paul. God, he was crucified, but he's crucified with Christ. That's kind of nice. And I live now not with my own life, but with the life of Christ who lives in me. He wasn't alone in it. If in union with Christ we've imitated him in his dying, we imitate him in his rising. The sufferings of Christ overflow to us, so through Christ does our consolation overflow. We carry with us in our body the death of Jesus so that the life of Jesus may be seen in our body. It makes me happy to suffer for you. All I want is to know Christ and to share his sufferings and to reproduce the pattern of his dying, says Paul. Well, you can read underneath all that and see and know something of that. There is a true sense of identification with Jesus. So long as we remember that Jesus suffered in order to put an end to suffering. Jesus suffered because he was opposing suffering. He didn't suffer to suffer. It was because he opposed the suffering of the leper and the suffering of Mary of Magdala and the suffering of the outcast and the neglected. And because he wouldn't put up with it, and because he was determined to heal it and to stop what was causing it. In that cause he suffered. He didn't suffer to suffer. Two possible attitudes then to God's will and suffering. The first is fairly superficially typical, I think, and it goes like this, that whatever suffering I have is willed by God. It's either directly intended or permitted by God. So, my job, Christian spirituality, I think pseudo-Christian spirituality, but let me just put it, is to accept the suffering, whatever it happened to be, accept it, and so submit to God's will for me and trust in God's wisdom and love. There's something lovely about that, but I think it's totally inadequate in the light of Jesus' historical experience. Another attitude is, God's will is that I love Jesus. I love whatever the circumstances, and that I be faithful to love. Suffering is part of living, and its causes are complex, sometimes, many times, against the will of God. And my task, then, is whatever the cause of suffering, not to let it deter me from loving.